dictators. They're supposed to be merely here to assist the elected bodies in gathering the facts, and so the elected bodies, reflecting the people's will, can make the appropriate decisions. So to say, you know, you absolutely have to do this and you absolutely can't do that, I don't feel like that's the role that those people should be in. And I think that they're trying to steer us according to their own personal political beliefs. And I think that's very inappropriate and very unfortunate as well.
So, again, kind of very quickly summarizing what you consider to be Berasoni's, dare we call them blunders, opinions that you feel were not representative of either the council's, the interests of the city, or one might even say the desires of the constituency that voted in the current majority, or perhaps not even legal, but seemed to represent a narrow interest. How would you quickly summarize that list?
Well, once again, Robert, I think that there's an interference in a personal political belief with the advice that we're getting, and I think it's either consciously or unconsciously, I can't say, but it's attempting to steer us in a direction, and I don't think that's the appropriate role for the city attorney or any of the staff. Their role is to give us the facts and let the electeds make up their mind what they want to do.
Sure, and run through some of those specifics in a moment after we take this latest phone call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Oh, yes, were you speaking to Fred Geiger?
Indeed, Fred is on the air, and I don't know if you can't hear on your radio, right?
Right.
So what we're going to do is we will try to get coax Fred to come a little closer, because we have to put him on the phone with you, and he can talk to you directly and answer your questions and comment, caller.
I'd like to ask Mr. Geiger how he thinks we're doing vis-a-vis the Tidelands and taking back the city from being a company town and returning the municipal beach to the people of the city of Santa Cruz and different issues involving the tourist traffic. Does he have any comments on that general subject?
Well, it is general, so I have some general comments. I mean, I think we're doing somewhat better than we were, a while ago. I think we've got a long ways to go. I think there is still some kind of undue influence from various, business factions. I know sometimes when a controversial issue comes up, they mobilize these phone trees and make a million phone calls to the council and say, hey, you know, we're business. I mean, somehow we're more important than any other faction in the community. I mean, I think everyone accepts that the business has an important role in the community, but I don't think by any means that they're ordained or holy or anything along those levels, and I don't think they should have any more input on a decision than any other faction in the community. I don't think that the community should be run for their interest more than any other faction in the community. We all exist here together, and we all should have a fair input into the situation. And you did mention some good issues there as far as traffic and impacts from the Seaside Company and things like that. And I think that the last election did show that people are concerned about the impact of tourism on our city. And, the Seaside Company may at one time been the major employer in Santa Cruz. I think Tim Fitzmaurice has pointed up in the last campaign that there's five bakeries in total that have more employees in Santa Cruz than the Seaside Company. So when they come forth and act like, we responsible for anything good that happens in Santa Cruz and, bring in all this money and without us, you'd all starve to death. That may have been true in the 1930s. I don't think it's true now. And I don't think we should be asked to make extreme sacrifices to further their business interests, because I don't think it's in the interest of the community to do that.
Well, maybe the fact that the Seaside Company is anti-union could mobilize some of the folks that are pro-union to also have some kind of phone tree that gets people calling into city council when issues come up and suggest that other people would like a piece of the pie, including the working class.
Yeah, there's a novel idea, isn't it, that somehow the workers that are responsible for creating everything should get a fair shake. I think that in the last year there has been an awakening amongst at least some of the construction unions as to the benefit of the Seaside Company to the community. I don't think the Seaside Company has a very enviable record when it comes to labor relations, and I don't think that they particularly, in my view, care about worker fairness. They get away with what they can get away with because they can get get away with it. And, you know, I think that it's unfortunate because I think that they could be a lot bigger factor in improving the lives of the people that are near their operation and also the people that work for them. I don't just mean the managers that live in Aptos. I mean the average persons that, that happen to work for the boardwalk.
I like the way you put that because I also believe that that it's not evil incarnate. I myself enjoy living by the boardwalk. It's just that unregulated growth of anything needs to be looked at in terms of who's getting the profit. If it's all just going right to the pockets of the owner or top management and not in the rank and file of the citizens and working people, Santa Cruz are only getting the having to pay for that profit, such as not having as much access to their own municipal beach and having to, you know, over amount of traffic to get to and from places, then even anything would have to be looked at and studied as to you know, what's in it for whoever's looking at the situation. But I like your attitude of inclusionary, but questioning what's in it for the working guy.
Yeah, I think we constantly have to be vigilant against the efforts of businesses to try to grab more than you know, we feel should be their share. I mean, that's the nature of businesses, to maximize their profits, but they don't look at, you know, of course, you know, the surrounding areas, I think, adequately as to how that's going to affect the people around them. And that's why we have to be politically active, such as in the beach plan, where people start saying, well, wait a minute, why should we give the Seaside Company $3.5 million worth of street realignments and utilities and all construction so they can attract more people? You know, we don't really feel like that's going to benefit us that much, and the economic projections showed us that the alleged increase in revenue to the city would have only paid the interest on the $3.5 million, never paid back the principal, and caused all this congestion and dislocation, and people just said, hey, this is ridiculous, you know, what are we doing here, it doesn't make sense. And so that's good that people were, although it took a lot of effort by a lot of activists on their own time, but the people were able to really see the big picture and look out for their own interests.
Yeah, I'm glad there's a burgeoning awareness, but I'm kind of afraid that it'll fade in time because, in my opinion, the we have a small town mentality still in Santa Cruz and are unable to recognize the decades in which perhaps the boardwalk was a plus for a bigger plus than it is now for the overall population. For one thing, it was more artistic and less tacky, and there was not much other things, and it was so much smaller.
Jane, let me interrupt you because I want to draw the conversation back to kind of the keynote of our show, which is to do with low-income people and poor people and homeless people and civil rights, and certainly the entire population is affected by what happened in terms of the beach area plan. But we've also been talking to Fred, and I know you can't get free radio where you are, about the issue of the Dolphin Lee project, and I guess I've been, you know, ragging on him for the council's unanimous approval of the highest priority being given to that project, and Fred proposed a very interesting compromise whereby adjacent property could be purchased, the money put into a building there, and then the Dolphin Lee possibly could be renovated through another means.
Sounds really good. Yeah, it kind of frightened me the way that came back so fast, because it was so obviously a return to the beach plan, it being the cornerstone of the trade-off and where the Third Street realignment would be. And
but I didn't see you throwing any tomatoes at the city council during Keith Sugar's coronation. Why was that, Jane?
Because fear of retribution.
Well, listen, I will defend
that
big thug is not going to get
Fancy, and I'm ashamed of it, but, you know, the folks that live in the Dolphin League did come out against the beach area plan, and Michael Hernandez and Scott Kennedy stayed indicated that they went down there and looked at the addresses and came back with their compromise, which was obviously to get rid of the people who...
Wait a minute, Jane. Your champion, Keith Sugar and Chris Krohn, are now on the city council, and there's nothing to fear, right?
There's people's habitual ways of looking at things and who they turn to for their...
I was being sarcastic. Haven't you, in fact, tried to get through to these three new council members repeatedly and been unsuccessful in even getting them to return your calls and talk to you?
Somewhat. They have a long-time association with people who do low-income housing projects and this type of redevelopment.
You're talking about the poverty pimps and the bureaucrats around Mercy Housing? Are those the folks you're talking about?
You know, it's been done a lot of different places, and these problems have come up with dislocation of people who just eventually lose out. In fact, we've had that problem right here in Beach Flats, where we had a project called La Playa. People were dislocated and displaced, and they are just simply gone. There's no replacement housing in which they were brought back into the... In fact, there was all kinds of fears by people that they were pushed out against their will. And, you know, this happens time and again where poor people are moved out of some place. They do not win. It's not a big plus for them. You know, I don't mind if the rationalization is get rid of these people because you think they're a problem. They're not. The specific Dolphin Lee residents are not criminal. They're not.
Let me ask you this, Jane. When I talked to Phil Baer, your husband, in fact, he was broadly applauding Keith Sugar and the council and commending them on what wonderful work they've done, and, you know, grinning broadly from ear to ear. Kind of made me sick, I got to be frank with you, because I know that you and Phil have been rather upset what the council's been doing. Yet, in fact, we see this endless schmoozing and shoulder, clapping and all this sort of thing. Has Dolphin Lee been stopped? I mean, are you satisfied that the council is now, on your side? I mean, or on the side of the...
I think you imagine that we're people of much greater means than we are. We are simply poor ghetto residents that are afraid we're next.
I see.
And all we're trying to do is save our butt.
Not us.
Yes.
Well, I mean, I guess that's fair enough. I hear you. I want to thank you, Jane. I got to run because I want to throw a few more questions at Fred before he slips out the door here.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
And by the way, for those who are interested in more information about Dolphin Lee, I'm going to take the liberty of doing this because Jane Baer, who we just spoke to on the phone, has given me permission before. You can give a call to 423-0170 and talk to Jane or Phil Baer about how you can help to stop the eviction of poor Hispanic people, maybe help with real affordable housing projects. We have another incoming call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hey, it's Merlin.
Yes, Merlin.
How you doing?
Good. What's up?
Well, I'm listening to this interview going on right now, and it sounds real clear coming across over in Capitola.
Excellent. I'm going to rush you because I haven't got much time with Fred, and I got to grab him for a couple more questions before he runs out the door.
Okay, buddy.
Hey, man.
Hey, I got David Silva coming on my show.
Excellent.
You're going to announce that.
Kick his ass. I mean, don't kick his ass. Kick the ass of the ruling class.
It's the 14th of December.
Hey, good. Thank you.
Okay.
And he's, sorry for my brevity, Merlin. You know, you weren't able to hear, Fred, the last, got the mic over there, the last show I did, which had Krohn and Rotkin debating and actually had a half hour's discussion with Councilmember Krohn. And, of course, a lot of us were dismayed listening to Councilmember Krohn. We could expect that Rotkin was going to give us the usual machine gun fire of rationalizations, which he is so good at. But Christopher Krohn, and that's why he takes a lot of flack from us, is kind of runs under a different label. I mean, at least that's what I thought he did a year ago, and that's what he still seems to be doing. He appointed someone to the Citizens Police Review Board who hasn't got any time to do anything, Sandy Brown, but her heart is certainly in the right place. She's tried, given the very, very limited amounts of time she has to get stuff done. But it looks like she's probably going to disappear on us, and somebody else will slip in there in her place. Not that it matters, because what we really need are changes in the police department. And to his credit, Crone has talked about that at different times, but again, not in a very public way, not in a very leadership way, not in terms of any concrete proposals. He's put, I noticed, hours of energy into the shoulder tap law, which I agree with him on, and I'm glad he's taking this position. But on positions like, and this, I guess, brings me back to what I'm about to play for you, the position of homeless people outside, 500 to 1,500 of homeless people, if you use last year's or 3 or 4 years ago statistics, in the city, not the county, but the city, who have no legal place to sleep, and you have a situation where they face $54 fines at night. We asked him a very simple question. We asked him, and I'll play this tape for you now, you know, don't you favor decriminalizing those people in some way so that they can have some legal place to sleep somewhere? And after a year, after 3 months of intensive work on the task force to examine the camping ordinance, this is the answer we got.
Christopher Crone and Robert Morris.
Yeah, who knows when these guys are going to get the balls to deal with the police. But at least the promise they made a year ago to do something about the sleeping ban, when are we going to repeal the sleeping ban?
There's a question for you. Chris, any thoughts on that one?
Well, you were around, David, when the sleeping ban came up the first time in this past year, and the many meetings that took place, and I personally didn't necessarily go along or feel good. I won't say go along, I feel good about the way it turned out. But I also think that you have 7 council members. I do think that we put it on the agenda. It was an agenda item that wouldn't have been there hadn't there been an election. And the repeal of the sleeping ban, I think, depends on where the homeless task force is going to go to and what recommendations get made to the council.
Actually,
I want to see people have a place to sleep. I know that you and I agree.
Chris, hang on a second.
As far as a safe place to sleep. So we both agree, and I just want to answer the question.
Sure.
So we both agree on those, and I think a lot of other people do. I think also is educating a lot of other Santa Cruz, parts of Santa Cruz, who we would like to bring on board. And I think that if you're looking for the city council necessarily to do what you just said, that might not be the place.
No, I think he's asking you if you are going to take action this winter to change the sleeping sections of the camping ordinance, when already your homeless issues task force over 2 months ago has called for the repeal of the entire camping ordinance. And I don't see, it seems disingenuous, Chris, for you to say you're waiting for the recommendations of the homeless issues. You know what the recommendation is. It was presented to City Council 2 weeks ago. Actually, it was more like 4 weeks ago. And it was passed the month previous to that. So what is this kind of talk? I mean, I can understand you're saying, well, I favor ending the sleeping ordinance, but I'm a minority on the council. That's a legitimate position. Are you saying you do or you don't favor it?
I think we spent a lot of time, Robert, talking about this issue. I think there's a lot of genuine concern on the part of council
members. What's your position on this, please?
Well, my priority list is getting more beds for people to sleep, and I think that we definitely
what about the 500 to 1,500 people outside? Should they be criminalized each night? Can you give me an answer?
Also need more shelter for women.
Should people be criminalized at night tonight while they're sleeping? Yes or no, please. Or maybe. Give me an answer to that.
Should people be criminalized?
Right. $54 fine. That's what your council, that's what you voted for in March of 1999 this spring. Should that fine retain itself, should be retained, or should that be eliminated? Should people be able to sleep at night without being arrested?
Well, Robert, if I could go back to those transcripts, and I wouldn't mind, if you wanted to.
Can you give me a yes or no answer on that one, Chris? Have we reached the point where a year later you can't give me a simple answer to that question?
We talked extensively about this. That's
just sad.
And I'd also brought up Robert.
So wait a minute. I feel that you probably do believe the sleeping ban should be repealed. But you're not saying so. So every time you evade the question, you let people believe that you don't believe that. Now, can't we get you to say that people should be allowed to sleep at night without being arrested somewhere?
I think the question is, I've said this before, and there's sure, I agree with you, but I'm trying to figure out what you want to hear, because I feel like you've asked me this question so many times, and we've talked about it.
I want to hear a member of the city council standing up for basic human rights for homeless people in a public forum, like the radio station that we're on now. I'd like to see it at city council. That's what I want to hear. I want to hear it repeatedly until the council moves in that direction. And I think that when you made that very, very courageous stand, that's why you're here on the radio station today, Chris. around shoulder tap. Shoulder tap.
Oh, okay.
You stood against the majority of the council. You were the only member of the council that voted in favor of what most of us feel is the appropriate position, not criminalizing young people, just like we don't want to criminalize homeless people. That's the reason that a lot of us voted for you and your fellow candidates. That's the hope we had to Catherine Byers that was sadly disappointed for throughout the last year. We have an incoming caller. Well, Fred, I guess in a way I was going to say, look at that clown. He doesn't even say he favors anyone sleeping there. But at the very end, I guess I got him to say kind of, yes, he did. What's your reaction hearing this kind of response? I mean, doesn't this saddens me. How do you feel about it?
Robert, I can't comment too much on that conversation because I just heard a short clip out of it. I mean, I think there's a couple of almost, I can say, we hold these facts to be inalienable, that people will sleep. I mean, you know, unless you want to pump them full of stimulants, and then sooner or later I think they'll still sleep. But
rubber bullets is what they use in Seattle, actually.
Yeah, right? So, I think sometimes people forget to deal with baseline reality. And then the other question is, well, what are we going to do about it if we don't like where they do sleep? So I think that...
Well, you're going to be facing that question at a hearing coming up at City Council on the issue of a question of Almar Avenue. And I guess I should mention this briefly. You've spoken to us about this on tape and in previous interviews. You're on the City Transportation Commission. I guess some residents of Almar Avenue, under the tutelage of Officer Howes of the Santa Cruz Police Department, came up to you asking that you, being the council, the Transportation Council Commission, asking that two blocks of Almar Avenue be posted with no parking signs at night to drive away campers in vehicles, so that if they even thought about parking there, they get illegal tickets. Your body unanimously passed that, and then later on, when you learned some of what the ramifications were, that it affected homeless people, the Homeless Issues Task Force was never notified, and I don't know what the issue is coming up. I believe on the 14th at City Council. Mm-hmm. For an appeal, because Laura Tucker of the Homeless Issues Task Force has appealed this. And to me, it's really kind of a minor thing. It's only two blocks worth of parking signs, but it indicates something.
It might be more major than you thought, Robert, because I have some more information you may not have heard yet.
Tell me.
First of all, let me give you a little background on that particular issue at that meeting. As a member of that commission, we failed to look at the larger implication at the time. We saw it as merely one of the numerous, you know, we usually have like maybe 15 agenda items and the consent agenda, and just a numerous mundane issues of sort of legalities, like the neighbors ask for some kind of a restricted parking zone, permit parking, or handicap zone, or whatever. And yeah, we go, yeah, okay, well, that's the procedure. If the neighbors want it by a 60% majority, they can have it. And it wasn't until after we passed that we started thinking about, this could have larger implications here. Is this part of a pogrom, so to speak, of a political direction, rather than just a few people in a neighborhood wanting some kind of a parking restriction? And it turns out the next meeting at the Transportation Commission, there had been scheduled to be on our agenda a similar posting for the entire Harvey West area.
And again, I want to remind people who are listening, what we're talking about is people who are in their vehicles, who have no other place to live, have to park somewhere legally in order to sleep at night, and they sleep in their vehicles. What's happened is that not just Almar Avenue, but I believe other areas prior to this, and I was wondering if perhaps probably haven't done any research into what's been happening previously on that issue, although mm-hmm. it'd be good to have that information for the next City Council meeting a week down the road. Posting no parking signs is a way of essentially saying it's like no homeless signs.
Yeah. Well, depending what kind of no parking signs, these were tollway at night no parking signs. So that's a whole different level, especially if you only have a vehicle for housing and it's towed away. then you're out on the street, which I don't think that benefits the city to take people's vehicles away from them and then they become completely homeless. And I think it's sort of a short-sighted and punitive type of approach to the whole problem. And so anyway, where I was at was talking about the Harvey West thing. So The Transportation Commission unanimously stated that we didn't think that the Transportation Commission was the appropriate place to bring measures that have larger political intents or implications, and so that the Harvey West matter is going to be sent directly to the City Council, and hopefully they will consider it based on all of its implications, not merely just on, you know, do we want cars parked here between certain hours, which is just the sort of thing that the Transportation Commission is supposed to be dealing with. We felt, I think, a little used in that it wasn't appropriate to bring something with a different goal before our commission. If it had to do with some kind of a political or a social engineering type decision, that's not appropriate for the Transportation Commission, and we don't intend to deal with those kinds of issues. And I think that was made quite clear to the staff. And as a matter of fact, I think the staff did, understanding our feelings from the previous Almar issue, recommend to send it on to the council as their staff recommendation, which we unanimously agreed to.
Again, I'm looking back on this Rotkin versus Crown debate. I want to kind of make a few comments about that, and if you have anything you want to interject or thoughts, please do. This was last Thursday, and I kind of looking at these two politicians, and that's, I guess, what they both are. That's how I'm viewing them. We have to say that the only two politicians I know, local politicians, have been willing to come on Free Radio Santa Cruz live. They both regard themselves as protesters, even though Crone made it a point of saying, I was not there in the streets protesting. I was there representing the City Council over the proclamation. In fact, he insisted on reading the proclamation over the air until I had to forcibly restrain him. I hope I didn't hurt him too badly. I suggested he get his own radio show because he has his own show at City Council. He could do it there. Rotkin, introduced the resolution in May urging an end to the Yugoslavian bombing. And again, on these international issues where the entire council pretty much agrees, Mumia Abu-Jamal, problems in Nicaragua and El Salvador, it's sort of like a whoopee-doo. I mean, sure, I'm glad that the council takes these issues. But the real question is, when you hear Crone using Rotkin's rhetoric, like he starts talking about shelter instead of about decriminalizing people. And what's interesting is, I mean, we all favor shelter, but of course, Crone hasn't taken one step in the last 9 months or made one public statement about increasing shelter. Yet now when people say to him, what's going on? People are being arrested, or should I say ticketed and harassed in the winter. He comes back with talk about shelter. This is what Rotkin does. Crone is, are we dealing with, unfortunately, I seem to be dealing with a similar kind of position. As I mentioned before, Rocky came out for rent control. Crone did not. Neither has come out for immediate council action in spite of the pressing need. And again, we don't have to talk about formal rent control. We can talk about something and some investigation into that issue, and nobody's been doing it. On homeless issues, Crone spoke more compassionately, rationally, and accurately at various points in the sleeping ban debate last winter, but he didn't take action. He made a few proposals at council when the issue came around, but in terms of leading a constituency forward to, let's say, counter the kind of misinformation that you saw pouring in on the Harvey West business, where they tried to use you as a political tool, in essence, they were able to intimidate buyers, and when buyers made a choice to go the other way, Crone and Sugar dutifully took their little red wagons and lined up right behind her. I mean, they differed, at the very end in certain points, but in terms of leading any constituents to say, no, there is an issue here of human rights. We never heard that from them.
Let me throw this in, Robert. I'm over time here, but I just want to answer this before I leave, and that is, I understand your frustration with basically nothing happening in this issue. I mean, it's been an issue for virtually a decade or more in Santa Cruz, and it doesn't appear that a whole lot's getting done, so I can certainly understand your frustration with that. I do think that Keith Sugar and Christopher Crone should be acknowledged for the courage they exhibited early in their first term. As a matter of fact, I think the first council meeting after they were sworn in, they did stick their necks out and
that
vote
was it.
Against
that was the last time.
Yeah, against the the majority, and
I'm tired of acknowledging them for that because you see they've had how many council meetings since where they haven't done shit. That's
well,
the problem.
We've got into this before, Robert. I think they figure why should they beat their head against the wall if they only got two votes? And I'm hoping that
Crone is beating his head against the wall for shoulder tap, and he only has one vote.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
We've got an incoming call. Don't go away yet.
Okay, I'm gonna.
That looks like he's off the air. Caller, call back. Sorry to. Looks like Fred is making motions to leave here.
I got to at least go to the bathroom.
He's got to go to the bathroom. He'll be back, though. We're going to lock him in the bathroom if he gives us any trouble. So I'm going to talk a little bit more about this the Crone-Rotkin debate we had on the air. I wasn't very happy with it. I got to be frank with you. I felt that should have been a lot more pounding from yours truly on both sides, and so I'm going to do a little pounding in abstention here, kind of comparing the two. If anybody out there has any thoughts on how that Crone-Rotkin debate went, what wasn't said, what should have been said, what you draw out of that, please give us a call here at 427-3772. We are at Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. That's what you're listening to. This is Bathrop's Pierre's Broadside, Civil Rights for the Poor. My guest is Fred Geiger, a labor organizer, and he's also a city transportation commissioner, though he's not here in that capacity officially, certainly. And again, we have an incoming call. Let's see what we got here.
Hi there.
Hi, Robert.
Yes.
This is Laura.
Hey, Laura.
Hi. I didn't listen to the Crone-Rotkin debate, unfortunately, but I was wondering if you were going to talk at all about this recent incident of troll busting over there by the Homeless Garden Project.
Why don't you talk about it yourself?
Well, it's all secondhand information that I've gotten, but I'm just a little bit concerned that the police department isn't taking these incidents seriously, and this is who we've left. If it is illegal to sleep, then we've left these people in the hands of this police department, and this is how they're handling, really serious crime. But anyhow, a friend of mine was camped out there, was heading towards his camp with his friend, and a pickup truck pulled up, a white pickup truck with people in it, and they scanned the area near their camp with searchlights, and then eventually one big spotlight, and they were able to hide, my friends were able to hide well enough that they weren't hassled, but then just a few minutes later a cop car pulled up and was searching for them. And so this leads me to believe that there is some kind of a possible camaraderie between the troll busters and the police themselves. And I've heard incidences of this before where, someone was hassled and then the cops showed up right afterwards. And, it reminds me of what happened with Happy John, where the bouncer from the Catalyst was in the back seat of the police car when Happy was shot. And anyway, I just kind of wanted to bring that subject
up.
Yeah,
I appreciate that, Laura. You want to take it on the air or do you want to hear it? Do you want to be a part of the discussion? What's your...
I'll just go ahead and listen. I know there's more to it. There was something that happened the next night.
I've actually turned out a flyer on the subject. The informant, of course, is Eric that you're talking about.
Yeah.
And the second man's name is...
I think he didn't really want the second...
Unfortunately, he's already out on a flyer.
Well, hopefully he'll talk. The problem is that nobody wants to be persecuted.
The question is, who can you talk to? The police department, it actually has taken, I guess, 4, maybe 5 accounts now of beatings, over a total of 35 to 45 beatings in the last year of homeless people. Some of them clearly because they were homeless, others just they happen to be homeless in a certain place and youth are acting up, or some youth skinhead gangs are acting up. And they can try to file a complaint with the CPRB, but the problem with the CPRB, aside from the fact that it's toothless and ineffectual, is even in the process it uses, any serious complaints of excessive force will necessarily be delayed half a year to a year if you want to file, let's say, a lawsuit or a claim against the city.
Well,
so the question, and you can't trust the police department in the sense that, let me put it this way, many homeless people don't trust the police department. You yourself have tried to file a complaint against, you saw an instance of a woman with handcuffs being applied too tight.
Right.
You tried to file it with Lee Sepulveda, the sergeant who is the liaison with the CPRB. He attempted actively to dissuade you. Isn't that accurate?
He didn't, I had to force feed him the information. He wasn't even interested in taking the information.
This is under the new city council, the new Citizens Police Review Board. You know, and every complaint that has gone to the Citizens Police Review Board, most recently the complaint by Marilyn Weaver and Doug McGrath concerning Officer Seeley, who at Karen Gillette's instigation tried to evict them.
Right.
And they said, we have tenant rights to be here. And Officer Seeley repeatedly said, you have no rights. This was found unanimously to be fine conduct, or at least not offensive conduct, not censurable conduct, but by Sandy Brown, Citizens Police Review Board member of the, you know, appointed by Christopher Crone, the entire gang of them unanimously voted.
I didn't know that. Well, I didn't know that, but this is, it's very frustrating because people come to me with this stuff all the time and don't want to talk about it or file a complaint, which you can really can't blame them because it is. It's an exercise in futility. It leaves them vulnerable, and we're in such a corrupt, such an incredibly corrupt city that it's very difficult for me to see the light at the end of the tunnel.
Here's some of the light is, I mean, we got a man in the studio who I think is trying to light a candle, and he's burning his fingers all over the place, but he keeps trying, and, you know, he's in a position of power where he's, for example, the appeal you filed, which will come to City Council on December 14th around the issue of, is it okay to put no homeless allowed all along the streets with little, you know, no parking signs, in essence, is what you're doing, and to do so without even admitting what you're doing, but to claim it's some sort of parking problem. Is obviously not acceptable, and his commission has ruled against that, although what the city council can do, who knows?
Right.
What they're going to do, we don't know. But I think,
it's encouraging that that happened, but I'd like to see what happens with the city council.
Definitely. Definitely. But I think the question you have is, how do we deal with this? Well, I turned out a flyer within 72 hours after I heard,
you know what, I'm on your hotline and there's a call coming through, so I'm going to put you on the air and pick up the line.
I'm
at Becky's.
All right, I'll let you go then.
Okay.
Let me just get in one more thing here, and I got to head out the
Please,
door.
Please, at least.
I think that basically, you know, looking at the big picture here, with, you know, homeless issues and the rent, you know, prices and lack of housing and problems with various police and all this and that, you know, we really have to get the political will firmly established in the council, and hopefully there'll be a new council majority in another year that's even stronger, and then start actually going into the staff level, in this case you're talking the police department, and really, you know, if this is a progressive city, and I believe it is, the voters want a progressive city and they elect progressive people, we've got to get that message all the way up and down the line through the city government. And as far as the police department goes, you know, I don't see any traces of progressive tendencies there at all. I think that there needs to be a whole new philosophy in the police department. I originally came from Los Angeles about 25 years ago, and as you know, they're notorious there for having a basically anti-citizen view. And
they can't trust the people, you know.
Yeah, I don't see, by and large,
people is a great beast.
A respect for the concept of civil rights in this town, and I think there's a lot of social stratification as far as the amount of rights you're supposed to have and the amount of courtesy you're supposed to be shown amongst various.
Fred, before you go, I know that one of the things I learned about recently was the sort of the incestuous relationship between the city manager, Dick Wilson, and the police department. We have a police department construction project that is $5 million over cost. It's a $13 million platinum police department. And I learned some rather astounding things from one of your fellow labor colleagues about how this all came about, how various non-union firms were chosen. Can you talk a little bit about that for you?
Well, yeah, we're talking here basically about the Responsible Contractors Ordinance, and this is another complaint I have with the city attorney's office. First of all, this ordinance is designed to protect two different groups. First of all, the taxpayers, which is very important, from getting lemon contractors onto jobs, which I have to mention the last four major construction projects the city of Santa Cruz has got involved with are still in court. Which
can you itemize what those are?
I can't. I can tell you, I think one is the Lotus Street parking structure, I believe the sewer plant, and the current new police station. So basically the responsible contractors law is supposed to get us not the low bid, the low responsible bid. As you know, if someone was going to hire a person and say their company, they wouldn't just go into a bunch of a room with a bunch of people in it and say, who's going to take this job the cheapest? You know, you do have some quality concerns there. I think the city staff, and you did mention Dick Wilson, doesn't really like labor rights. They don't like union rights. They have to negotiate with the city's unions, and they have an antagonistic feeling. And they go for the low price, and it blows up on them, as it has in these four cases. And that's because they don't want to put in the extra time and energy to really research these contractors and get really responsible contractors. And I think that this is costing the city a lot of money. I was told by Mr. Wilson that we can't really apply these responsible contractors screening processes to subcontractors because it would take too much staff time. Well, I'm wondering how many hours of staff time could we buy with the millions of dollars of overages and defective buildings and court costs and et cetera and et cetera.
Toxic dump under the parking lot of the police station, windows that are screwed up.
And so the other
$5 million cost overrun.
The other issue under the responsible contractor ordinance is to protect the workers. I don't think the people of Santa Cruz want to be part of a government that's exploiting workers and employing contractors that break laws that are designed to protect workers. I mean, we're not, you know, we don't want to be.
Wasn't that in fact the case with the police station, that they got a contractor involved who had, mm-hmm. had a previous record of criminal behavior and other contracts?
I presented the city council, this would be the old city council majority, with a copy of a National Labor Relations Board appellate level conviction or finding, as they call it, I believe, of the original electrical contractor on the new police station called American Electric. And this finding said that they had been found to have told their members that they would never hire a union member and various things along those lines. And this finding required them to make good damages to a person who was a union member who had applied for work with them. So they were found guilty of, in fact, a practice that made them an irresponsible contractor, and yet the city administration did nothing about having them removed from the job or prohibiting them from doing future work. As it turns out, they did prove themselves, I think, to be a very irresponsible contractor. As a matter of fact, they went bankrupt and left the job unfinished, and left one gentleman owed over $5,000 in benefits, and his back health benefits weren't being paid. And I believe this person passed away and never had his benefits paid.
Wasn't there a second contractor?
Yeah,
that wasn't involved.
Okay, so then they got another contractor.
This is for the police
involved
station.
Involved here on this police station, Triad Electric, and I know a complaint has been filed, I believe, to the Department of Industrial Relations, that they've also broken state laws requiring apprentices to be, in fact, bona fide apprentices. I guess in this situation, they're being accused of having people that are permanent apprentices, so they get paid half or 5/8 or whatever of what the prevailing rate is supposed to be, and they don't go to school, they don't get their skills upgraded, they don't ever get raises. It's sort of like a permanent indentured servant position. And
a program set up to meet the letter but not the spirit of the apprentice requirements?
Exactly, yeah. And, you know, what troubles me is not the lack of the concern on the city council, because I think almost all the people on the city council don't want to see this kind of stuff happening. There's a lack of concern on the management of the city. And as a matter of fact, Mr. Barisoni, the city attorney, when he was asked by Keith Sugar at a city hearing on this matter, what does this responsible contractor's law say? He started reading it, and after probably a paragraph or two paragraphs, he got to the key operative phrase that said, or subcontractors, and he skipped that phrase, completely skipped it, and continued on with the rest of the ordinance, and at which point I was so infuriated, I happened to be sitting in the front row, I jumped up and grabbed the microphone and said, I'll tell you what this law says, and I quoted the part that he had eliminated or omitted, because I happened to have been reading along with him.
He didn't have his glasses on at the time. Right?
So, yeah, I mean, to me, it's like, well, we have two possibilities here. What happened? Okay, maybe he did blink, you know, maybe he accidentally skipped this phrase, although this is the one two-letter crucial phrase in the entire ordinance that related to the subject that we were talking about. Or
he's a crooked city attorney, is what you're saying. It's a pretty serious allegation here.
There's another possibility. To me, either one is totally reprehensible to either unintentionally or intentionally mislead a city council member as to what a law says when you're asked.
Well, this is what I said about Police Chief Steve Belcher, in that, for example, in the case involving Steve argues selling newspapers when he was falsely arrested last November and is now suing. Attorney Kate Wells is suing the city on this issue. And it looks like there's some rumblings that they may be settling. I'm not sure, because it's a very pretty open and shut case. They arrested him on a law that didn't exist. I mean, they claim that you can't sell newspapers on the street without a license, and you can. It is legal to do that. And then they also beat him up along the way, threw him down, cut his head, held him in jail for 4 days, and released him without charges after charging him with a felony assault on an officer. This was back in November. It was no assault. It was bullshit. And the CPRB, again, it upheld two complaints. Two complaints were sent. It didn't uphold them. It denied them, both those complaints. And Chief Belcher sent a letter which then explained that all this was being done because Steve argues real crime was obstructing the sidewalk.
Uh-huh.
This is bogus. This is bullshit. And when we attempted to bring Belcher up on this issue, the city manager wrote me a letter saying, well, this whole thing has been examined, and we think it has no merit. Mm-hmm. So we have three officials, the city manager, the city police chief, and the city attorney, all of whom can be removed by a 4-3 city council vote.
Actually, it's not quite accurate, Robert. It's 5-2, and
not
the city
so.
Managers...
Where do you get that from, Fred?
Well, I may be wrong. But
I think you're wrong on that issue. I mean, that was brooded around a lot last November. When I called the city attorney, and he may be wrong, I said, how much does it take to remove you? You said 4-3.
Oh, no, city attorney definitely. He's,
right.
he's a
and
contract
the, and the city,
employee.
Anything else, the city manager and the city police chief, he said it takes 4-3. The only thing that requires 5-2 are emergency legislation. 5-2
property condemnation.
Eminent domain.
Yeah.
5-2.
Well, it'd be something for us to find out, because I think
we'll hit the books, folks,
issue.
Before the next edition of Bathrobe's Beer.
Scott Graham out there, the ace researcher.
Me, man.
But
get on the case, Scott Graham, if you're out there.
Well, Robert, I'm going to head out the door. Thanks for your
extra half hour.
It's been fun.
Is there any way people who want to help you in your project to clean up the city? I know you're starting a new mass movement. Should they get in touch with you? Or
Well, perhaps we could all just show up down at the city hall with brooms sometime and start waving them.
Brooms with little Celia Scott dolls on the head.
Just stay awake. There's another election coming up. The campaign will probably start in about 3 months, and we've made some steps in the right direction, and we need to do better and go
like
further.
Right wing direction, I'd say. But
okay, Robert, take care.
Thank you, Fred. Been listening to Fred Geiger, a local community activist who has been hanging on by his tonsils and is now taking off. Thanks a lot, Fred. Now, this is Free Radio Santa Cruz 96.3 FM. Phone lines are open for those of you who have been chomping at the bit, and here's an incoming call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hello, Robert. This is Donna.
Hey, Donna Dice. Donna, you're with the Tenants' Rights Union of Santa Cruz.
Santa Cruz County, yes.
And what's happening with that? Or what's cooking? Or what's on your mind, I should say?
Well, I think more than businessmen...